Roger is here. All right. How you doing, my friend?
Doing good.
You back off the road? I know you were off doing, when we were first setting this up, you were off doing book tours and...
Yep, I'm here today and tomorrow, and then off tomorrow night, Tampa, Birmingham, and Dallas.
Oh, terrific. Well, anyway, we've got, I'll let you all do kind of a quick intro. Craig is here.
Hi.
Thank you. Tell him a little bit.
That was good, Craig.
Yeah, I'm Craig. I'm calling from Cafe 50s. We're an American-style diner. Open breakfast, lunch, dinner, 7 a.m. to midnight. And we're in West Los Angeles.
Okay.
And Marcy?
Marcy Boat from, Finn's Grill in Sebastian, Florida. I have a waterfront seafood restaurant open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week. And we're right near the Sebastian Inlet.
Okay.
And then Captain Catfish.
Colonel Catfish. Yeah, my name's Butch. We're from North Mississippi. And we have a restaurant. We're only open 3 nights a week to the public. We do a lot of private parties, and then we do a ton of catering.
Well, you got Roger, so I'll this is really more for you to get your questions answered from him. So I'll just kind of leave it to you. Marcy, this is your first time around, so you want to start, or?
Actually, I'll listen for a while. I'd like to see what kind of format takes place.
Well, okay, it's just real loose. It's the same, it's just chatting on the phone. We just have a few more people here.
Okay.
So,
Marcy, what it comes down to is that I don't have all the answers, but in some areas I have more than you do. So you could ask me questions and recognize the fact that in some areas you have more than I do.
I think, actually, I listened to, when I joined up with Bill, he sent a tape, and, you know, I diligently listened to it in the car. Every time I got in the car, I listened to you and Bill discussing staffing and what we're going to do, and it helped motivate me to try and reevaluate, you know, how to keep the good people and how to make, I think, some of the tough decisions.
Uh-huh.
I have I actually worked at the restaurant for 2 years before I bought it. So, I've owned it for 2 years. And so I have a different relationship with some people who were there when I was an employee.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden I own the joint. And they're probably my biggest pains because, they have a relationship with me on one level and they just fight me on everything I want to do. And if I just tried to make a procedure change, they badmouth it to everyone involved. And it's just been a very stressful staffing issue with we call them our old timers.
Mm-hmm.
And so after listening to the tapes and whatnot, I'm starting to figure out, okay, I can turn them into hopefully a partner in this, or I have to let them down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
exactly
turning
true.
Them into the partner is what I'm having a hard time doing.
Well, it sounds like you need to have a little sit down with each one of them individually and talk about roles.
Mm-hmm.
You're all there to earn a living, and each of you has a different role to play, and your role has shifted to the role of owner, and that you have a certain responsibilities that you have to follow through on, and certain things you have to do, and some challenges that are a little more difficult for you than what you were facing before, and you need their help and you need their cooperation, and if that's going to be comfortable for them in your two roles, then great, let's move forward and really make a difference for everybody. And if it's not, then somebody has to go, and you're the owner.
Right.
So it's not going to be you.
Right.
But move for the positive first.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel these people are a positive asset for your restaurant, if your feeling now is that maybe they aren't, and I'm hearing a little bit of that, then maybe it's time to say goodbye now.
Right. Cut your losses.
Well, what I've always maintained everybody's good at something.
Mm-hmm.
Just not everybody's good at what they're doing right now. And you got to find out with these folks if they want to be good at what you need done right now,
or if
they want to be good at something
else.
And if it's something else, then get them over there to it, because they'll be happier and you will too.
Mm-hmm.
But
and
I think
somewhere else may be another restaurant in town.
Right.
Yeah, could be an auto parts store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is less critical what it is than that they find out that it is. But I think in that first meeting, one of the things I'd want to do is just listen. You're not trying to make a case. You're not trying to talk them into anything. Mm-hmm. You're not just really trying to find out what they want to be when they grow up, and see if there's a fit there with what you need. And maybe there is, and maybe there isn't. And
yeah, find out, you know, ask questions like, where do you see our business going?
Right.
And then just close your mouth and open your ears and see what comes out. If you're feeling a lot of animosity and so forth, then, you know, they may be telling you a story.
True, yeah.
One thing to remember is that we as employers never fire anybody.
Right, they fire themselves.
Yep. And this may not be so much a case of firing somebody as a mutual decision that you've both been avoiding.
Right, you get comfortable, I think. And I think as a restaurant owner, that's where I know personally I face most of my challenges. You know, you get comfortable, and it's very easy to just to stop seeing outside of the box.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Craig?
Roger, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'll be honest with you. I don't know much about you. I just was going through my email, and I saw about this teleconference, so I really don't know what your specialty is.
Well, you didn't get the tape?
Workplace issues.
Have you retention.
Oh, employee retention. Okay.
Yeah, and the thing that we were talking about when we did the MIS interview was just what Roger sees coming in terms of some rather dire labor shortages, and what we ought to be doing now to be ready for that when it comes, because our industry typically is going to take it the shorts when jobs are plentiful and or jobs are, you know, people have a lot of options that they don't have right now.
Have you heard of hcareers.com?
Of hcareers?
I think it's called hcareers. It's to the Restaurant Association.
No, I'm not familiar with that. Are you, Bill?
No, I know that NRA just did something. Is this something through National Restaurant Association?
Yes.
I heard that they've done something on the website in cooperation with somebody
called
else.
hcareers. And I'm looking for an assistant manager, and so far I've gotten about 7 resumes.
Hmm.
And that was a week ago. And you know, I'm tired of spending $250 in the LA Times every time I'm looking for a server or a manager. And so far I'm surprised with the response.
Interesting.
And it's like $99 a listing. And they'll either email to you, or they'll fax you, or they'll through snail mail.
Have you ever done anything with Bonster?
No, I haven't. I've looked into it, and it's been very expensive. And most of the restaurants in there are like chain restaurants. I mean, even with hcareers, I called them up and I said, hey, you know, I'm a one trick pony, and I was like, you've got all these corporations, big corporate offices putting ads. So I give it a shot, and so far I've gotten a lot of responses.
That's great. Now, are you developing that kind of talent within the organization, or are you trying to?
I have in the past, but I think I'm going to look for something a little more talented.
Okay.
To maybe someone to bring in, you know, some marketing expertise and some past experience. I find when I hire servers and turn them into managers, it works out good as far as the floor and dealing with customers. But it doesn't help me on the back end with, you know, maybe just some fresh ideas for promotions and marketing.
I'll have to let me tell you a quick story, and I don't want to take all of Roger's time here, but it sort of fits. I know Edmund, are you? I don't know if Edmund Wu made it onto this one. He usually is on these calls. He has a restaurant in Greenville, South Carolina, and he said, I'm a front of the house guy. That's what I do, and I needed systems. I knew that, so he hired a guy with a strong chain background to get him organized. And he said the guy did exactly what I wanted him to do. We've got great systems, and my volume went from a million two to 900,000. So. Because people coming from the chain background, they weren't front of the house people. I mean, they had all the, you know, the linear type stuff down. But in terms of guest relations, that really wasn't one of the things that they were trained to do. So as you're looking for talent, that's one thing to consider is, you know, what are they talented in doing?
Well, you know, I've always found though that if I hire look at a manager applicant, whether it's assistant or general, if they haven't had extensive restaurant experience, you know, they might say, oh, they had retail experience and so on. I'm just not that interested.
Yeah.
I want someone that, you know, when they were 18, you know, was slinging hash, or someone who was serving customers, seating people. That's usually what I look for.
Okay. I just bring the chain thing up because, you know, that chain restaurants are restaurants, but sometimes the skill set is different.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Their hearts not in it quite the same way. There isn't the same kind of passion there is with the one-trick pony, if you will.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I think my biggest challenge, I have a vested interest in how do you get your employees to have that same level of love. You can't. And you know what? You can pay them higher than everybody else, and you just can't get them to think, and it is amazing. I mean, I have a very small pool to choose from in Sebastian. It's a very small town. You know, I have one on the east coast of Florida, and it's, you know, it's just, I don't have a large labor pool to choose from. So, you know, I'm picky because I am a very much a local restaurant. You know, I have all the repeat customers. I mean, people eat at my restaurant, eat there, you know, 3-4 times a week. But you just, when I'm not there, how do you make them think? You know, I empower them. I do all the stuff the books tell you to do, but you can make them think.
Well, one thing that has helped me in some of those areas is to understand that there's a lot in life. There's a lot of right answers, and a lot of times we make it difficult for ourselves because we start to say that, you know, the way that we want to do it, our right answer is the only right answer. And I think part of what will help the cause is to, you know, lighten up a little bit. I'm not sure if you know how heavy a hand you run it with, but, you know, let people, you know, use, you know, apply their own right answers.
Mm-hmm.
The more involved they are in it that way, the more they're going to say, how do I make them feel like they're part of things? Is to make them part of things.
Well, I'll give you what I'm talking about and how you get them to necessarily think. You know, I've been spending more time out of the restaurant because I do have a good management staff. You know, I really, for the most part, have a very good staff. You know, on Thursday, both urinals in the men's room broke. You know, I called my manager Friday morning and said, call this plumber, get him in there. I have a list of plumbers. They've not been real successful. You know, being a waterfront restaurant, we have more problems than most, I would think. So I said, you know, call this plumber, get him out there. This needs to be fixed today. She's not a problem. So she called that plumber, and he said, I can't come. So she said, okay. She didn't call anybody else. I come in Friday night at 5:30, and it's still not fixed. I'm like,
ouch.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing. Like I said, she's phenomenal everywhere else. She really is. And they're the kind of, they have handbooks, they have guides. You know, if this breaks, call this person. But, you know, if that person's not available, you got to get your bathroom fixed.
Yeah, I would be very puzzled and sit down with them from a state of being very puzzled and say, I'm really having a very hard time understanding what went on here, so help me see this.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is you can't teach common sense.
Right.
And if they were all as good as you are, then it'd be their restaurant.
You know what I do is I have a list of four plumbers, you know, starting the first one I went up to the call, and then, because a lot of times the plumbers are out on calls and just go to the second, to the third, to the fourth.
Right.
So, part of this particular situation, Marcy, may have been in the way you communicated your expectations.
Right.
And if you had shifted that around and say, okay, what result are we trying to accomplish here? Well, we've got to get the urinals fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. Will you take care of making sure that gets done? The list of plumbers are in there and so forth. And, you know, have them tell you, you know, ask the questions in such a way that they say, yep, I will get that done.
Right.
And then tell them, okay, if you have any problem with it, let me know. But otherwise, I'm holding you accountable for that. It's done.
Right.
Okay, it's your baby. Handle it.
Right.
And that way, you've made it clear to them what you expect from them. They know it's their job not just to call a plumber, but to get the problem solved.
Right.
And that you're available if they have difficulty, and that they should call you.
Yeah, it sounds
and,
like...
And, you know, that way, whether it's urinals or, you know, whatever it may
whatever.
Be. They know that their job is to get the results done. It's a different kind of an approach.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is, you know, we're doing all this together, and this part of it is your job, and you. I'm asking you if you will take that, and the other person is either going to say, yep, I'll do it, in which case, okay, great, I'll hold you accountable. I understand that's going to happen now. Any problems, call me. Or if they don't want to accept that responsibility, then you may want to ask questions like, well, all right, where's the problem here? What's getting in your way of getting this done? I need your help on this. And they may say, well, I've got too many other things to do here to worry about that. Okay, who could be doing something else? Is there somebody else that could do that?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I don't know how to talk to plumbers, or I've never been in a men's room before, and I don't even know what you're talking about. You know, so, you know, so just explore it to find out where the obstacle is, what's getting in the way of this person doing what you want them to do. If they build the comfort that they can get things done, and they've got confidence in themselves, and they know you have confidence in them, then you're developing a different kind of relationship that we're all in this together to get the job done. And it doesn't matter who's boss and who's not boss, we're all working as a team. That way, you build the kind of relationship and the kind of feeling that will hold people longer with you and give them a different kind of an attitude toward what their role is within the organization. And the more people you have like that, that will, you know, take the ball and run with it, and whatever needs to be done, and you can be proud of them and acknowledge them for it and thank them for it, the stronger you're going to be.
Right.
Yeah, I would say without knowing anything more than just the situation you described, I would say one way to explain that behavior was that at some point in their lives, and whether it was working for you or working for somebody else, they did something other than strictly what the boss told them to do and caught hell for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently it's like, well, I won't go there anymore.
Right.
You know, so that may be something to look at. And sometimes we, you know, we have a tendency to do that even though we don't mean to, of, you know, they did it differently than the way I wanted it done. But I think Roger's point is good. Let's focus on what the results are.
Right.
And as long as we're not breaking any laws, you know, why would we care if you do it one way and she does it another way? Or, you know, but we need the restrooms back in operation before the people
right.
come in.
Well, I've started a, you know, I'm calling it, you know, like just a critical path management. And, you know, this needs to be done by this date, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
why?
You know, this needs to be done. This, you know,
why?
Mm-hmm. Because if I don't give them deadlines, they won't
no.
work. They don't.
Why
and
does
I,
it have to be done by that particular time?
Oh, well, I'll give you an example. I have a, I'm doing a new menu, and I have pretty much done everything. I know, You know, I probably shouldn't have. I bit off more than I could chew.
Hang on. I'm looking at the bigger picture.
Okay.
Okay? If you're telling them it has to be done by a certain time or certain date or something, the question they're going to have in their mind, they may not ask, is why? And if you explain that so they can say, okay, here's why this needs to be done. Now I understand. Now I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why it's important. Oh, okay. You see?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's all part of this.
It doesn't matter. What it is the idea that the people understand what it is you're trying to accomplish and why,
mm-hmm.
and why it needs to be done by a certain time or a certain date or in a certain way. We as bosses are often guilty in assuming that people understand everything just because we do.
Right.
And nothing could be further than the truth, because they haven't had our experience.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to help them with that.
Right.
Bill, you agree with that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why there's a... you're not... Marcy, you're not on the coaching program, right?
I'm sorry, say again?
You don't get the coaching program material?
I am. Actually, when I joined up, I think I joined as like a gold member.
Oh, okay.
So that was all part
because
of it.
Because the thing we were talking about I think it was last month, about, you know, when you have a problem of noncompliance, what are the possibilities?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to really exhaust them kind of in that order, do they understand what it is that you want?
Mm-hmm.
Do they understand how to do it? Do they know why it's important? Do they have a better way to do it? You know, does it have to be done at all?
Right.
You know, those kinds of things, and sort of step through that. And it seems like it takes more time. And maybe in the short run it does, but what happens over a period is that they come up to speed, and then you don't have to do that anymore. Otherwise, you're always, you know, sort of step aside, let me show you how to do it, and then they just defer to you.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah.
You said a mouthful a while ago about the boss maybe chewing a raisin hell or something. I think also sometimes, you know, we say we give our employees freedom to get where we want them to go, but, you know, when you come behind them and try to redo the way they're doing it, it has that negative effect also.
Uh-huh.
And I've noticed at my place, I mean, I can leave, things will run smooth, and I can walk back in the door and everybody wants to lean back and me make all the decisions again. You know, I mean, and that's just part of it. I know even when I'm away for a while, I had folks that would call and say, hey, this is what's going on. What do we need to do? And my response finally, I finally learned the best way to handle this was, well, you know, what do you think we need to do? And I may have got this from some of your tapes.
Could be.
You know, what do you think we need to do? Well, I think we should do this. Well, then do it. And if it don't work, we'll talk about it Monday.
Yeah.
And,
if I was at a movie and you couldn't reach me, how do you think, how would you handle it?
You know. And that has helped a lot on my end as far as, getting to where I want my employees to be.
I'll tell you a great story. I was talking to somebody, I can't even remember where, and they said, you know, when I was an hourly worker, every night the manager would come to me and tell me to clean the shake machine. And I hated to do that. And what I knew was, though, if I didn't do it, within half an hour he would. And so I never cleaned the shake machine. So if we, you know, if we're coming along, cleaning up after them, redoing it, letting them off the hook kind of thing, then there's no reason for them. Yeah, we're just training them to defer to you. And that doesn't help any of us. But
when I work with CEOs of all different kinds of companies, I teach them a very simple question to ask. What do you think? When people come to you with a question or problem, whatever, what do you think? And then if it seems halfway reasonable, great, go for it. And if it seems like it's off base, then the next question is, well, tell me how you came to that kind of a conclusion, that kind of an idea. So you can hear their thought pattern and be able to correct the thought pattern or modify the thought pattern in such a way that they can make these decisions on their own. They learn the process, and pretty soon they stop running to you all the time.
So is that the end effect, Roger? If I keep telling them, what do you think, that eventually they'll stop coming to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen it work hundreds of times.
Well, what you may also, the thought process that may change is your own. You know, you may go, oh, damn, that's great. I hadn't even thought of that. That's great. I mean, you can learn something in the process, too.
And recognize your people really have a head on their shoulders.
Okay, how could you broaden this when they, I have a couple of waiters that come to me a lot asking me for things that aren't even in my department, you know, things that the chef would take care of, or the busboy would know where the glasses are, you know, in the middle of a phone call, or in the office, they'll come ask me, we're out of wine glasses, you know, instead of maybe asking the chef or the busboy who knows where they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so turn it right back to them. Okay. Well, what do you think we should do about it?
Okay.
Or how would you find the answer to that?
If I wasn't here, where would you go?
So yeah, so that I like that answer. That's a good one. If I wasn't here, who else would you ask?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I wasn't here, who else would you ask? I like that one.
See, something to think about. This is there's really sort of two models of education. Or learning. One is an outside-in process, and the other is an inside-out process. An outside-in is fine for how do you run the POS system, and you know things that this is information that you don't have. But a lot of the things you're talking about is helping people come to their own understandings,
uh-huh.
And that's an inside-out process. So you can't give them the answers and have it work. They need to come up with their, you know, for the thing to really stick. They've got to come up with their own answer, and that's where asking the questions comes in.
Okay.
Because management, coaching is management is about making good statements. Coaching is about asking good questions.
And then leadership is
getting the herd to move roughly west.
You know, I have a question, kind of, you know, in that, you know, along those lines. You know, I had a, you know, I guess we have a very local business, so most of my staff knows most of my customers. I mean, they have more relationships, and it's that kind of a place, real friendly, real warm. You know, we had someone new in the kitchen on Friday. Well, he wasn't, or not was it Friday? One day last week, we had somebody who was fairly new, and he was in there with one of my long-term cook who's been with me for over 2 years, and my employee is all about himself. You know, he will do whatever he can, unfortunately, to make everybody else look bad. As long as he looks like he's wonderful, he, you know, steamed clams were taking a while, and he, you know, he's telling a story to one of my other management, to one of my managers. Saying, well, you know, I had to tell Vic that I had to beg, borrow, and steal to get his food out of the kitchen tonight. And I looked at him and I said, why would you do that? Why would you have that kind of a, why would you say anything negative to a customer, regardless of your relationship? So how would I turn something like that around to keep it positive when what I really want to do is smack him across the head?
I take that, right?
There's always a classic conflict between sales and customer service and production.
Mm-hmm.
And in the restaurant industry, that is the conflict between the servers and the kitchen.
Right.
And you folks know a lot more about that than I do.
Yeah.
What I look at is in all the different kinds of client environments that I get into, is how can we help each group understand what the other group is working with to build mm-hmm. more of a team relationship. And it seems like there's an adversary relationship between at least that server and the folks in the kitchen. Or the server's trying to make it look like, hey, I'm really going to bat for you. If it weren't for me, then you wouldn't have any food tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, that's not the kind of image you want to communicate to your customers. And that server has to understand that, you know, the best way for us to keep customers coming back is to have them get the impression that, you know, we're all working together as a well-oiled team here. And if you convey the impression that that's not the case, then that's not good for business and certainly is not good for your career with us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there's a problem, then let's resolve the problem. But if there isn't a problem, let's not create one. It's part of the image that you need to put across. Now, have you had, and you know, I find that very few companies have done this, have you ever sat down with your people and talked about what kind of a reputation you want to have with your customers, with the community? How are you positioned in your marketplace? What kind of an experience do you want people to have in coming to work with you?
I know personally, I've done that. I meet personally with every new hire, whether or not I've hired them or not, and I explain to them, you know, what I expect as far as customer service and guest satisfaction. And
Marcy,
yes,
that's your decision. If you're telling them, they're not buying into it. You got to get them to say it. So what I'm suggesting you do is sit down with your people, and you know, if you need to pay them for a little bit more or something like that to have a time when there's nobody in the restaurant, but the rest, you know, the team, then just do it and get the folks together and just talk about what is it we're trying to do here and ask for their input, not just you lecturing, this is what it's going to be. Now, they've got a vested interest in your restaurant being successful. Because the more successful that your restaurant is, the more secure their job is, and the more they're going to make in tips and all the rest of it. And their own personal reputation by being able to say that they work at your restaurant, that they're part of your team. So, okay, here we are in our community. This is our market area. These are the kinds of customers we have coming through, or at least could come through here. How do you think we ought to be positioned in this marketplace? What would we want people to be saying about us? And get them to talk about it. And then when they lay all that out, they say, okay, how can we make that happen? What can we be doing? What should we be doing so that we achieve this? And we've done this with restaurants, with hotels, with retail stores, you know, all different kinds of companies. And it's incredible how many companies ever sit down as a team, the people, and talk about who are we anyway? What are we trying to be out there? How do we want to be positioned in the marketplace? Bill does this all the time. He talks to himself all the time. And that's why he's known as the restaurant doctor. He's known in the field. You take him outside the restaurants, take him to a retail store, and nobody has the foggiest idea who Bill Marvin is, even though a lot of his ideas would apply very well there. But he's very specifically focused. You know, when you go to Bill Marvin, if you've got any kind of an issue with restaurants, here's the man. And he's positioned that way. So the kinds of clients that come to him are restaurant clients. So what kinds of people are you seeking to attract, and why would they come to you? And each of us in running our businesses has to look at that, whether we're a lunch and dinner operation, or whether we're focusing heavily on catering, or whether we're open from early in the morning to late at night. You know, the same kinds of things apply. And in fact, with Craig, your restaurant, Craig, still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. You know, you probably have different kinds of clientele during the different sections of the day.
Yeah, that's true. Business people doing lunch between 10 and midnight. We have AA groups and young people.
Mm-hmm.
families between 4 and 7, seniors at between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. about it all.
So, Marcy, what he's working with there is a number of different market segments, and he has to work with his team to look at what market segments are we looking to attract, why are they going to come here, what do they expect when they come here, and how do we give it to them? Now, what happens from this is you begin to build a cohesiveness among the people working with you that says, we know what we're doing. We're doing this deliberately. And, hey, here are the results we're getting deliberately. Hey, this is working. This is neat. And they stick around. It's when they're totally confused that people leave. And a lot of employers give people wonderful opportunities to leave and go somewhere else because they never help them understand where it is they are to begin with.
Well, what they're there to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, the purpose of the restaurant is not to provide a job for these guys. The reason they're there is to help accomplish something. So what is it that we want to accomplish? And let's get some clarity on that. I mean, you may find, you know, that becomes a very important part of your whole staff selection procedure to make sure that you're signing people up for, that they are in fact signing up for what it is that you want them to do rather than just who will give me $8 an hour. I mean, my first job was washing dishes when I was 14, and all I knew was go back there and wash dishes. I had no clue as to how that affected anything else in the restaurant, why that was important. I just knew I did it, they gave me money, I went home. You know, that's not much to build a career on.
Yeah, that's simply attending work.
And you see the bigger picture. The question is, do they?
And if they don't, it's your fault. Because you're not allowing them to. And when you help them see the big picture, it's amazing what happens. And yeah, we've seen this with all different kinds of organizations. I had a printing company that was having all kinds of challenges, and we went in as consultants and formed teams of people from each of the departments. So there was somebody from customer service, somebody from sales, somebody from pre-press, somebody from the press area, somebody from the bindery, somebody from shipping and receiving on a team. And each week, that team would go to a different department where the member of that team from that department would explain, here's what we do here. And people were saying, geez, I didn't realize you did that. You know, if I did my job just a little bit different over here, it would probably help you a lot, wouldn't it? Oh, geez, hadn't thought about that. Oh, this is what happens to what I do. I wonder what happened with all that stuff after I was done with it.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing that they don't have a clue.
They did the same thing with a truck manufacturer. People were manufacturing the different parts and assembling it, but nobody ever got to see a completed truck. Hmm. So we set things up so the plant manager took people out to lunch on a random basis several days a week in a truck that was rolling right off the end of the line. Brand new. You know, hadn't even been driven yet.
Hmm.
But people were able to see it. This is what I do. This is what I'm building. Wow. And, yeah, this is where you could encourage your servers to tell the people back in the kitchen how much people really enjoyed the meal. If somebody says, well, that was a great meal, have the server go back there and tell the chef, guess what these people just said? They were so happy. And it may be that you even want to have the customer meet the chef. You know, bring the chef out if your situation is like that. You really like the meal, huh? How'd you like to meet the guy that cooked it? Really? You see the kinds of things that could be done? Get your people complimenting each other and thanking them for doing the kind of thing that they're doing. You know, how many busboys are ever taught, this is why we don't make a lot of noise when we pick up the dishes and so forth from the table? You know, don't just dump the thing in the tray. It's making a lot of noise, and you know, all these people are having a terrible dining experience because of that. Here's the way to make their experience even nicer. You know, little things.
Well, if you remember that interview we did with Van Yor at Angus Barn, you know, their folks work for 2 months every place else in the restaurant before they settle into their final job.
Good.
I mean, and it's, I had a, you know, one guy I was, did an interview with a little while ago, was doing it for like 7 to 10 days. I thought that was great, but 2 months is staggering. But the restaurant shows it. I mean, it's obvious when you go in there that everybody's on the same page.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of restaurants that do a super job with that. And most don't. So if you're looking to differentiate yourself from the competition, there's a way.
Bill and Roger, something you guys can help me with.
Okay.
I've explained to my servers when I hired them, I said, you should look at your job not as a server, but as a commissioned salesperson. Because what you, when you, a commissioned salesperson makes money by on volume what they sell. People tend to tip 15-16% automatically on what they purchase. So, by the more you sell, you know, upsell desserts, beverages, and whatever, the more you're going to make. And I give them charts and sheets versus, you know, someone having bottled water and not drinking water and dessert and not, and I show them the difference. Then on top of it, I give them, like, tools. Like, I give them business cards
great.
With their names on, and they, at the end of the meal, we don't, I tell them, if they're not a regular, go ahead. They give them on the back, you know, a free cherry pie the next time you come back, Hot Fudge Sunday. Or if they're outside the restaurant, they can put 15% discount on your meal. But the problem I have is some servers get it. They understand that, you know, if I put this business card down, or if sometimes we have raffle tickets, it enhances their experience, makes their experience better, that they make more money. But then I have other servers. They just don't understand. They say, oh, well, my service is good enough. You know, they just don't, I just don't know how to make it clear enough to them that this, you know, you had to put your uniform on. You spend 8 hours in this uniform. You had to come here and drive here. Why not maximize what you go home with?
Well, because that makes sense to you. It doesn't necessarily.
I know. What's an approach to have those that think differently?
Well, I think it's what just what Roger was talking about before, is to sit down. I mean, I think if you did nothing else but sit down with everybody for half an hour, one-on-one, no interruptions, no phone calls, no nothing, and just find out who they are.
Okay.
What they want to be when they grow up.
I'd go back to the selection interview. Now, why do you want to work here?
You know, I don't... ever since I first met Bill, He sent me his cover page, and I mean, my last three hires have been right on, no problems. It's just the people that have been here a while that we didn't hire, and train in that sense. You know, trying to explain to them that you know you could make more money if you make your customers happier, if you take care of their kids and you don't forget to bring them balloons or coloring contests.
Well, they may, you know, and it may not be about the money.
Some people are not comfortable doing that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Would you be happy driving a truck around the country?
No.
Okay.
Some people love it.
And a truck driver may not be happy working in your restaurant. But the truck driver may be happy as a pig in mud driving that truck up and down the highways. So if you've got people that don't fit, you know, unless you're married to them, there's no reason for them to stay.
Okay.
Or find out what they really want to do and help them start doing it. I mean, they may be a better fit in the kitchen.
Well, one thing that I found that helped, and I started about 4 weeks ago, is we do a sales chart at the end of their shift. They have to, you know, we keep track of how many customers buy entrees and how many upsells and desserts and add-ons.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the week, you know, we give them a cash prize and so on, but to the top sales. But now that the people are charting against each other, it's really obvious who's pulling their weight and who isn't.
Mm-hmm.
You want an interesting number to keep. Do you take reservations? I mean, it's table service, right?
Right.
Okay. Keep track of call parties. How many people come in and ask for Mary? The more people that come in and ask for Mary, the better job Mary's doing of creating a clientele and establishing a connection.
And if there's and, a and business card being used, then there you are.
Then it may or may not be how much, you know, what her check average is. But if she's creating the loyalty.
I see what you're saying. If people come in, and even though her check average, she doesn't do much sales, but people have been coming here and they love this person,
yeah.
That's a wash.
They're not going to the competitors.
That's right. No, okay, I see. No, it's not that it upsets me. I see the value of all my people on the floor. They're very good people, a lot of them. They have loyal followings and so on. It's just that sometimes I was just wondering if there's maybe I'm not finding the right angle to explain to them, hey, you can, you know, don't you want to make more money? Because sometimes they'll complain, oh, I'm broke and this and that. And I just point out to them, hey, you know, I think you probably could have made an extra $12 in the shift had you, you know, give more attention to their kids. Had you given them a card at the end of their meal, saying, hey, next time you come
suggestion.
In?
Ask more, you know, know less and learn more.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Know less.
Know less.
And learn more.
Okay.
So, rather than, I mean, because it sounds like you're making an assumption, and this is sort of what the things we were talking to Marcy about, is that you kind of make an assumption of how it is or how it ought to be, and then you go and proceed to try to fix it. Bring them around to that understanding, rather than understanding why it is that they're doing it the way that they're doing it, and why that makes sense to them, and you know what they want to get out of it, and so forth.
Lecturing employees doesn't get it done. If the employee says, "You know, I'd like to make more money," or something like that, says, "What would you like me to show you how?" Well,
and then you get permission, and when you have permission, you teach.
Okay.
But don't teach without permission.
Okay.
But don't lecture at them. Show them how to do it. Don't say, you know, take care of the kids. Well, what do you mean take care of the kids? That's the same as Bill being sent back to run the dishwasher.
Oh, no. I give them samples. I give them scripts. Give them suggestions, you know, how to upsell, you know.
Yeah, but see, the question is, have they said, you know, if they say or until they say, gee, could you show me how to do that?
Uh-huh.
Then they're not really that receptive to the idea. It's like me
right.
showing up, you know, and saying, you know, you got a lot of problems here, and I can, you know, I can help you fix them. And it's like, thanks for sharing, and please die. You know, I didn't ask for your help.
Right, right.
You know, please don't fix my life until I ask you for help.
You can lead a horse to water, but it won't drink unless it's thirsty.
Yeah.
That's right.
So find out. I mean, and it may be that, you know, that money isn't the issue, or certainly it's not going to be the issue for everybody. I mean, I don't mind making more money, but it's really uncomfortable for me to do that, therefore I don't.
Okay.
Okay, so let's look at some other alternatives.
Yeah.
Hey, Roger.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that we can do as far as employee retention and recruiting good folks? I'm primarily open on the weekends, so most of my employees are part-time folks.
Uh-huh.
Give me some ideas to help with recruiting some good quality, what we're looking for, and then also keeping them once we find them.
Okay, not difficult at all. What kinds of people do you need?
Well, I need everything. No, primarily servers.
Now,
the problem I have, I'm in a college town.
Whoa, back up. What kinds of people do you need? I don't care what they're going to be doing. What I'm looking at is the caliber and attitude.
I guess I assume you knew what I needed, didn't I? You know, I'm looking at folks that, you know, I mean, I can teach somebody how to be a good server or waitress.
Okay.
I can't teach them how to smile. I can't teach them their personality.
Okay, so the first thing you want to hire for is attitude.
Right.
Okay, and if they come in and they don't have the right attitude, they don't strike you right away, it's going to be a short interview.
That's true.
Okay. Now, if they do have the right kind of attitude, then we go back to Bill's question about what do you want to do in life? And the question that I use is, why do you want to work here? You've got all kinds of opportunities out there. There are lots of other restaurants in town hiring. There are shoe stores and gas stations and delivery services, all kinds of things. Why do you want to work here? Why do you want to be part of this team? Okay? And then listen carefully to what they're saying, and if it isn't consistent with what you're trying to accomplish there, well, this probably isn't the right place for you because we can't really offer you that. But if they come up with an answer that you're looking for, which could be, I want to get some experience in working at a high-quality restaurant, or I like meeting people of all different kinds, or I just had the feeling in looking at your restaurant that I'd be able to earn some pretty good tips if I did a good job. You know, these are the kinds of things you're looking for. And then you start talking about, well, what we're looking at here is an exchange of value. So what kind of values do you think we should be exchanging for each other? Now, I'll give you some pay and I'll give you an opportunity. What do you see yourself bringing to the party here, and what else would you like from me? And now you're going to get into some attitude issues, some customer service issues, and some training opportunities. You're actually getting into a deeper discussion with them ahead of time, so that when they come to work for you, it's not just a job. They're coming to work at your restaurant very deliberately. They're making a conscious decision. And you also have a good understanding between the two of you about what your mutual expectations are in terms of flexibility of hours, or ability to generate some high tips, or an opportunity to really learn how to do this.
Roger?
Yeah.
The question, why do you want to work here? Should that be followed up with the question, why should I hire you?
Eventually.
Okay.
Okay? And now that'll come a little bit later, but what you want to find out first is where their heart is. And then you could ask the question of, you know, why should I hire you? But be ready to answer the question about why they should work here if they ask you. Okay? So, you know, great question, I worked for you. I got all kinds of opportunities. Why should I work for you?
Right.
And, hey, Butch?
Yes, sir.
One thing that can be a good start to that, you say, you know, are they giving me the sort of answers I'm looking for? I'd sit down and talk to some of your real good workers, you know, the ones that you'd clone if you could.
Right.
And just say, why do you work here? I mean, they've got choices. What's the best part about working here? Find out how they tend to answer those questions. And if somebody else shows up and they tend to answer questions in a similar way that your good people do, they're probably more likely to be workers like your good folks than if they answer questions like some of your marginal people.
Bill, what's also worked for me is I think you mentioned this, is I have my, after I interview them, I have my one of the servers interview them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my staff selection system was all set up that way so that the crew could do big chunks of it.
And I've gotten some no's, you know, because sometimes they'll confide in things to them and say, hey, this person's got a drinking problem, you may not want to, you know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or just say, this person isn't going to fit the team, I can tell, and, you know, I get some really good insight.
But your crew won't hire jerks.
Yeah.
Given the option, because they got to work with them.
Exactly.
But they need
a couple of years ago.
They need some structure, though, just a second. They need a little bit of structure so that they don't ask the kinds of questions that they shouldn't ask.
Or that somebody else just asked.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can't. There are things that you can ask them, and there are things that you can't ask them, and they better know that, because you're gonna take the hit if they do something that was inappropriate. So they need a little bit of a track to run on. But definitely, once I get my crew involved, once I get my cooks involved in hiring cooks, I got a lot better cooks. We've got about 5 minutes left, so...
All right, let me just cover something here. A couple of years ago, we did some research on why people work one place rather than somewhere else. What are their criteria for making a decision? So let me give you a website. employeroftheyear.net.
Of choice?
Employeroftheyear.net.
Okay.
And when you get to that website, click on the book and click on Table of Contents. And you'll see a list of those criteria. Things like the company, the culture, enlightened leadership, care of people, growth and opportunity, meaningful work. And look at how you can key in to those kinds of things in your conversations with these people. And see what trips the trigger. Be sure it's consistent with what you're looking for. No more warm bodies.
No, I stopped that. I'd rather do without.
Right, and you know, let me give you two examples. One is the Marine Corps, highly selective. And the other one, and Bill, you may want to comment on this, is Ruth's Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Only open in the evening. And their servers make a ton of money. But their servers are also highly trained, and they're very selective about who they hire. A good model.
But you got to start, I mean, and the point too is you got to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you may not be the employer of choice at the moment, but you can start moving in that direction.
Exactly.
Because the employer of choice has the pick of the litter.
Yep, everybody wants to work there.
The thing to understand is this is not something that you get solved and then move on to something else. This is something that you'll be dealing with, you know, as long as you're in business. And keeping your finger on the pulse and asking a lot of questions and talking to your crew and finding out what they see and making adjustments and bringing people in and cutting people loose, and I mean this is what it's about. So you might as well get a system and enjoy it, because you'll be doing it. You know, it never goes away. At least I've never seen it go away.
Nope. You always have to keep reinforcing it. But that's part of the fun, because as you get better and better at it, your team becomes more and more cohesive, much more stable, and the stress level drops. Your stress level drops.
Yeah, and then you watch, then the lights come on, and they go, that's what you meant. That is so cool. I mean, I'll tell you, there's a lot of things about day-to-day operations I don't miss, but I do miss the day-to-day with the crew and watching them get it and then take off. And I mean, it's get a chill when I even think about it. It's great. So I envy you that opportunity, and I just hope you don't miss it.
Yep, stay close. And stay close to your customers. I'll just share this with you from experience. I had having dinner out the other night at a new restaurant that inspired me to call the owner and have a little chat with him. I felt like, you know, Bill Marvin East. The manager, the owner, needs to get out and talk with the customers. How are you doing? How did you like your meal? How was your service? Anything we could do better? And whenever you get positive feedback, give this positive feedback to everybody who's involved with it. It makes them feel better about who they are, what they're doing, and that they really appreciate it.
What was your next question? Anything we can improve?
Pardon me?
The other question was asking, is there anything we can improve?
Mm-hmm. Say, my favorite question is one of two. Either how do we do a better job for you next time? Because you don't have to be bad to get better. It doesn't have to be a bad time tonight in order to be able to do a better job.
Yep.
One of my favorite ones, though, is, you know, you think for a second, you say, what would it take to make it absolutely perfect?
I like that.
And then,
I do that with complaints.
Yeah, but I mean, just somebody says, you know, so you go through the dining room and you'll say something stupid like, how's everything? And they go, fine. And so, what would it take to make it absolutely perfect? And they'll tell you something. if you're really interested, then shut up and get real stupid. And they'll tell you something. And every once in a while, you're going to run into somebody who said, well, perfect would be if you bought my dinner tonight.
I hear that all the time.
And every once in a while, do it.
I do.
When it strikes you, just do it. It'll blow them away, and it's so much fun. But mostly they'll tell you. I mean, you'll get information to the extent, and this is true. I mean, it's fine to go out and talk. You got to go out and talk with your guests. You also have to do the same thing with your crew. It's exactly the same deal, and you will get information to the extent that people feel that you're really interested in it. If you're asking the question because somebody told you you should ask the question, then, you know, give him the answer he wants, he'll go away.
So, are you saying, Bill, that at the end of the evening or the end of the day, it might be a good idea to ask your employees the same question?
Yeah, I think it's. I think at least half an hour every month, you need to sit down with folks one on one, and just find out how they're doing, where they are, what they see, what their suggestions are. If this was their place, what would they change about it? You'll get huge, huge ideas. And it'll take a while before, you know, they'll tell you safe stuff in the beginning, and then the more the level of trust comes up, the more they will give you some really potent ideas. It almost gets too easy. All you have to do is just ask questions, pay attention, and do the next obvious thing. I mean, but your guests will tell you exactly how to win their business, and your staff will tell you exactly how to get the most out of them. You just have to be open to taking the information. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
The problem is that if you do that kind of stuff, then you're going to have to go buy some chairs for people to sit in the waiting area.
Yeah, you're going to get... That is a problem. You just get so much business that it'll drive you nuts. Yeah, maybe just forget about it, guys.
Yeah, it's too much.
Roger, thank you, my friend. I appreciate you making time. I know that your schedule is jammed. And appreciate you breaking away for an hour with us. Thanks to Craig and Marcy and Butch for taking time away to call in. I hope you got a few things out of it. I hope you'll join us on some of these calls in the future.
Okay, well, it's always a pleasure for me to work with you, Bill.
And get to Raleigh sometime. To go to Angus Barn and take a look. I think you will be pleasantly surprised.
Okay, I'll have to do that. I'm going to have to be traveling all over the country.
The things you do in the name of research. Well, that one I figured, you know, an hour away, probably you could handle it.
Yeah, all I need now is an hour there, an hour back, and about 3 hours for dinner.
Perfect. Now go and take Sam, because she'll tell you a lot about it as well.
She'll tell me a lot anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, you all been terrific. Thanks for your time. We'll give them the line back, and we'll talk to you next month.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks, gang.
Bill?
Yep.
Bill?
Yep.
Well, the one thing question you said before, what would it take to